Well, it's time to say goodbye to the TOTN Summer Movie Festival for this year, but don't worry, we're going out with a legend. Back in March, Hollywood lost one of its brightest Hollywood stars, so we've decided to dedicate our final Summer Movies installment to Elizabeth Taylor. She began her film career in the classic National Velvet.
He's a gentle one. I'll just call him Pie. Oh, you're a pretty one, Pie. You didn't mean to run away.
You're a wizard, Velvet.
May I ride him, Mr. Reed?
Ride this horse.
Oh, please let me ride him.
And ride him she did. All the way to stardom, she became one of the few child stars to find even more success. As an adult, she won 2 Oscars and played everything from Maggie the Cat to Cleopatra. What's the Liz Taylor film or part you love the most? The number 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And, of course, joining us to extol Miss Taylor's many virtues, oh, those violet eyes, is the man himself, NPR's Talk of the Nation's favorite movie buff, Murray Horowitz, back with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Murray.
Hey, Neil. Thank you. And thanks for this topic. What a pleasure to see these movies again.
This Elizabeth Taylor, it's interesting, drawing distinction sometimes between her favorite film and her favorite part, because some of those films...
It's true. It's interesting. Some of the films you look at, one that is a favorite of mine is Tennessee Williams. It's an adaptation of his late play, The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore. And it's this film with Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, Noel Coward. It's called Boom, right? It's a Joseph Losey directed film. Not a great film, but she's remarkable in it, and it's just so weird. It's, you know, so sometimes you're right. She's doing a remarkable job, and the film's just, I don't know, it's got problems.
And Boom, she plays a wealthy, dying woman on a secluded island.
Now tell them to bring the table over here so I can put my chair in the shadow when I want it in the shadow. My skin's too delicate to be in the sun for more than half-hour intervals. Now tell them what I want put on the table. A cold bottle of mineral water, suntan lotion, cigarettes, codeine tap, a bucket of ice, a glass, a bottle of brandy, my newspapers. The Paris Trib, the Rome Daily American, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Daily Express.
And I'll have your liver for lunch.
It's true. With some fava beans and a nice candy.
Yeah.
No, she, and that's it about her, you know... She took on these amazingly challenging roles. I was talking to the film scholar, Sammy Wasson, about this, and he said, well, you know, her acting sometimes. And to me, the index of it are these almost impossible roles she took on. I mean, Cleopatra and, you know, in Suddenly Last Summer and all these Tennessee Williams females. What woman would do that to herself to take on these impossible roles?
We forget also... A star.
I mean, the biggest.
Every step of the way.
A huge star. I mean, people forget how huge, how long she was number one, and how very number one she was. She was nominated for Best Actress something like 4 years in a row. She won twice. She also, let's not forget, her humanitarian work and one of the first important stars to speak out about AIDS and government inaction about AIDS. And so she got the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Oscar in 1993. She was it, Jack. I mean, in the late 50s and early 60s, she was number one for a very long time. And because she had grown up in the studio system, she knew from a very early age that she was going to be a big movie star, and she was the best Elizabeth Taylor you could imagine.
You mentioned her work with AIDS, in part due to her friendship with Rock Hudson.
Right.
And in Giant, she played the wife of the wealthy Texan rancher who begins to care about the poor Mexican-Americans who live on their ranch.
Jordan, that place is a scandal. Dr. Guerra threw his hands up in horror.
That's his problem.
You've been a big, powerful, rich Texan for 100 years. Why don't you do something?
I'm not the Red Cross. I'm a cowman.
Well, if you won't, I will.
Oh, if he won't, James Dean will. Actually, James Dean won't.
Well, that's a George Stevens film. And another index of a great actor is... whom she works with and who chooses to work with her. I mentioned Joseph Losey, George Stevens, Vincente Minnelli, Richard Brooks. I mean, just some extraordinary directors who wanted her because she delivered for them. She would try anything. I think she was a very, very courageous actress.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can begin with Sherry. And Sherry's with us on the line from Canyon Lake in California.
Hi.
Hi.
She was my favorite. for all time. And I have to say, I admire her most for Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, because what she was going through in her personal life, her husband at the time was killed in a horrible plane crash, and she didn't go because she wasn't feeling well, and she had just had a baby. I think all the things she's going through, and she's just so wonderful. And of course, watching her with Paul Newman on the screen was the one and only time. It was a wonderful experience to see over and over again.
This is, again, one of those Tennessee Williams roles. And, of course, not just Paul Newman, but Burl Ives. Anyway, let's listen to Elizabeth Taylor as Maggie the Cat.
I love you, and that's worth fighting for. Not Skipper. Skipper was no good.
Maggie.
Maybe I'm no good either. Nobody's good. But Brick, Skipper is dead. And I'm alive.
Maggie.
Maggie, the cat is alive. I'm alive. Why are you afraid of the truth?
Wow.
Mendacity.
Well, because he couldn't handle the truth.
That's a different movie. But, you know, Sherry points out something really important, this kind of conflation of her, which is what you want from your movie stars after all, isn't it? Of her personal life and her on-screen work. She, as I said, she with the multiple marriages and the tragedies.
That particular husband was Mike Todd, the
right,
producer.
Exactly. So the producer, Michael Todd. And you know, and the scandals with Eddie Fisher and Richard Burton and this and that. And so that when she does this long series of movies, beginning in the 1960s with Richard Burton, she doesn't do any films without him for a long time, even appeared as an extra in a couple of films just so they could say they did it. It's as I say, this combination of her private life and her personal life and her professional life that she played to the hilt, and we went right along with her.
Sherry, an emailer by the name of Tom, shares your opinion. I've seen Cat in a Hot Tin Roof about a dozen times. Truly remarkable cast. It's also, I think of all of her pictures, well, Cleopatra special, but or unspecial. Well, it's sui generis, that's how we say.
With the emphasis on the sui.
But chop suey. But the good ones, that's the best, I think.
I had also heard one other thing I wanted to share, that she was in such a state after the Mike Todd crash that she was actually starving herself. And if you remember the scene early on the movie, the ice cream scene, the director kept shooing it on and on because she wasn't eating, and he wanted to get some, you know, sugar in her.
Mm.
And she was really in a bad state during that filming.
Another email on Cat from Paul in Los Angeles. When I was 8 years old, my parents decided I was old enough to go to a movie by myself and let me pick the film. I immediately said Cat on a Hot Tin Roof at the age of 8. they looked at me in stunned silence. Did I know what this movie was about? No. Then why do I want to see it? Elizabeth Taylor, I said. I was fascinated by her conversion to Judaism and wanted to see this. They let me. I didn't understand most of it, but really loved watching her on the screen. Years later, when I had correspondence with the great actor Larry Gatchis, who paid Doc, all he would do was talk about the wonderful appearance of appearing opposite Elizabeth Taylor. Sherry, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, bye.
Well, the emailer points something out, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is an example of it. And this has to do, maybe I'm going too far with this one, but I love going too far, with her cultural importance. We think of the 1960s as the time of the sexual revolution. She really, after the decency code of the early 1930s, she was the first person to embody sex a generation later in the 1950s and infuse it with a kind of humanity. I mean, a girl who would have sex outside of marriage was a tramp, was, you know, and it was usually some temptress like Mae West, or it was some foreigner like Marlene Dietrich or something. But it's kind of like Nixon and China. It took somebody with impeccable girl next door credentials. You know, she was the kid in National Velvet, mm-hmm. as you point out. She was the daughter of the father of the bride. So she could do A Place in the Sun and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and Butterfield 8 and get people to accept her. She was a real flesh and blood woman who was sexy.
This email from Laura in San Antonio. The Taming of the Shrew is my favorite. Miss Taylor had a wonderful comic talent, seeing up close her pretending to be that docile beauty, then morphing into that strong-willed Kate in a matter of seconds was priceless.
If I be waspish, best beware my sting.
My remedy, then, is to pluck it out.
Aye, if the fool could find where it lies.
Who knows not where a wasp doth wear his sting in his tail?
In his tongue.
Whose tongue?
Oh, as if you talk of tails, and so farewell.
Talk about working with playwrights. That's a pretty good one.
Pretty good playwright there. And interestingly, I know she was nominated. She might have won the British Academy Award for Best Actress for that. So if you can win an American doing Shakespeare, wins an award in England, that's pretty good. And I'm glad you mentioned that film because it's Franco Zeffirelli. I think it was a follow-up to his Romeo and Juliet. And it's really a very satisfying Shakespearean film.
And willing to take her husband on in his ballpark.
Right, absolutely. Very good point. Very good point.
Let's go to Charles. And Charles with us from Portland. Charles, you there?
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
My favorite is just her cameo in her very last movie with Fred Flintstone's mother-in-law. She's on the scene for about 2 minutes and stole the movie, I thought.
That wasn't that difficult, a movie to steal.
That's true, too.
Some disagree with you. I noticed she won some, I don't know, Turkey Award or something, Michael Medved Award for or somebody's award for the worst performance of the year in that movie. But she did a lot of TV work at the end. One of my favorite turns that she does is in the movie in 1977 of A Little Night Music, where she plays a faded starlet, or not starlet, but an aged star. And she was not afraid to do that, to be herself in a way, a has-been.
Charles, thanks very much. Appreciate it. An unusual nomination. We're talking about the films of Elizabeth Taylor, the late Elizabeth Taylor, with Murray Horwitz, Talk of the Nation's favorite film buff. The last in our series of summer movie festival programs. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. That's where it's from. And we mentioned earlier Cleopatra. This is, I think, minute by minute, still maybe the most expensive picture ever made. It almost bankrupted 20th Century Fox, giving Taylor the Guinness Award for most costume changes in a movie. And, of course, the Taylor-Burton romance. Here she is as the Pharaoh of the Nile.
While they were digging the foundation of my tomb, the workers found an old wall. Someone had scratched on it hundreds of years ago. You were not here last night, and I could not sleep. Will you be here tonight? Do you suppose they ever met again?
She could not only change costume, she could read hieroglyphics.
It was, you almost had to do that script. No, I'm sorry. It's unfair and catty of me. But she, this is, you're right. This is a famous disaster, this film. It's just, when you watch it now, and I must confess that I haven't watched the whole thing straight through in quite a long time, but it just...
She dies at the end.
Yeah, right. I know how it ends. The thing I remember most about that film, Neil, by the way, when I saw it, is you remember she had had some near-death experience and she'd had to have a tracheotomy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was makeup to try and cover up her scar, but you could still see the scar in her plunging neckline. And why do I remember that?
I saw a lot of plunging neckline. I think that's probably why. Let's see if we go next to Kristen. Kristen with us from Memphis.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I have to say my all-time favorite movie has to be Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. For someone who was, to me, one of the most beautiful women in the world, it was a very unglamorous role, but played superbly by her and Richard Burton.
That was also her second Academy Award for the hard-drinking, foul-mouthed Martha in Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Mix me another drink, lover.
My God, you can swill it down, can't you?
Well, I'm thirsty.
Oh, Jesus.
Look, sweetheart, I can drink you under any damn table you want, so don't worry about me.
I gave you the prize years ago, Martha. There isn't an abomination award going that you haven't won.
Swear if you existed, I'd divorce you.
You existed, I'd divorce you. Oh, my gosh.
That's fantastic stuff. Kristen, the film, Sandy Dennis was also in it. And
George Segal.
Young George Segal before many other movies that he was less distinguished in.
It was sick. It was twisted. It was funny. It was sad. It just ran the gamut. And to me, that was such a superb performance by both her and Richard Burton, who... I just think those two had amazing chemistry in some of their films. I love them both.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kristen. And it was virtuosic. It was really first-rate acting, first-rate writing, first-rate film directing, cinematography, sound. Film got nominated for an astonishing 13 Academy Awards. And the reason it's astonishing is it was Mike Nichols' first film. And he gets 13 Oscar nominations. They won 5 of them, including Oscars for Burton and not for Burton, but for Sandy Dennis and for Elizabeth Taylor. And it's just, it's an incredible, pitch-perfect ensemble performance.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Kristen, thanks very much for the call. And
thank you.
From that, does Virginia Woolf take away the Murray?
Well, you know, put a gun to my head and I'd say yes. I mean, that's her greatest performance, I think. I mean, it's just an astonishing performance that holds up for its naturalism, for its range, just everything. But no, the Murray goes, I'm trying to do something offbeat.
Okay.
And there was a great discovery that I just happened upon when it came out in 1970, a terrifically unsuccessful film that was directed by the great George Stevens. It's called The Only Game in Town. It's a Frank Gilroy script. It's a gambling movie, and it's one of my favorites, a Maurice Jarre score. It was supposed to be Frank Sinatra in the male lead, but Elizabeth Taylor got ill, and she postponed the shooting, and then Sinatra couldn't do it, so it became Warren Beatty. And it was really... you'd think of it as offbeat casting, but it was perfect in a way because she plays an aging Las Vegas showgirl. He plays a somewhat younger, or making it somewhat younger, gives it another dynamic, lounge pianist mm-hmm. in Las Vegas and a compulsive gambler. And I recommend it. It's maybe a little dated, but it's a terrific little show.
Name again?
The Only Game in Town.
Murray, always a pleasure to talk with you as we take a stroll down the Walk of Fame with you. Thus, sadly, ends another TOTN Summer Movies Festival. We'll, of course, be back next summer, and we'll take any other opportunities in between. Murray, thanks as always.
Thanks. Have a good winter.
Tomorrow, Canada, already our largest source of oil. Now, a Canadian company wants to build a pipeline from Alberta to Houston. Some ranchers along the way protest that this will pollute the land and destroy the water. We'll cover that tomorrow. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.